mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 451. I'm Adam and...
Tractators! I've seen them!
And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Oh, marvelous, you're going to kill me. What a finely tuned response to the situation.
Kirby Melrose.
We can't go dragging around the universe with a dormant Gravis on the console.
Robert Haynes.
Tractators! Kibble, spit,
kibble. And Mary Lang.
You're not hat people, are you? Either of you?
It's funny, though. I can just about cope with that many people to remember while doing the introductions at the beginning of the show. So I can scratch myself with one of those. Or just not my hand sanitizer while doing that. Okay. Milton hand sanitizer, which is very good. Actually, talking to you lot, I have to remember to sanitize said hands while doing the show. Right then. So, yes, this week we're going to be looking at Frontiers. I nearly forgot the name of the thing. Frontiers. Yes, this week. Lillian Robin says, wood lice time. What do you mean, wood lice time? Oh, wood lice. Yes, of course. Sorry, Debbie. Sorry, Debbie, I was talking about what Lillian was saying. I didn't hear a word of what you said then.
What did she say?
Who?
Lillian.
She said wood lice time.
What?
She said wood lice time. And I think they look more like those creatures from Ark in Space. What were they called? Oh, God, I can't remember the called now. Remember the creatures from Ark in Space?
Yeah.
What were they called?
The Ergon?
No, the Ark in Space. Yeah, the one.
Ark in Space. One Viren.
Viren, that's Viren. It. Viren. That's what I thought they looked like.
Last night on the virtual Hulanta.
Yeah.
What was her name?
I don't know. The Star Trek
drag cosplayer.
Vijay Clark.
She was interviewing a Viren.
Oh, there you go. Right then, suppose we better get on. Is everybody all right, by the way?
How do you interview one of them?
Yeah.
It was somewhat wrapped in green bubble.
So is everybody okay then?
Why have I blanked on her name?
Because she, I think, is becoming a he and has changed her name to Julian, I believe.
You're going senile?
Me? Or Kirby?
Who's going senile?
No, because he's asking the question.
Me?
No, Kirby.
I'm going senile.
I did answer the question. I'm pretty sure I did. Did I not answer the question? Hello? Did I answer the question then?
Kirby asked, why can you not remember? And I said, because you're going senile.
Oh.
Jeez.
Anyway, Laurinick says, hello all. And then Terry Barr says, tractators.
Yes.
Or as they say...
Potatoes.
As they say, and it says tractators.
There we go. Moxie Magnus was interviewing a person wrapped up in green bubble plastic.
Yes, I think we established this a while back.
Super Dad.
Oh, I can relax now. You found the name.
Yes. Yeah. That's the important part.
Doctor Who, Frontiers, begins with...
Oh, we're starting already?
Yes, shut you up. God's sake.
Anything.
Yeah, so it begins with somebody wearing one of the Star Trek costumes. Are we cosplaying Star Trek? Obviously, this is a planet of Star Trek. Can I delete that bit? I have to do an edit on that. I meant Star Wars. Why did I say Star Trek for us? Because I'm staring at the Enterprise as I speak. I do apologise.
Can we start again?
Yeah, we'll start again. It's a good idea. Okay, so it begins with some rubble and some people cosplaying Star Wars.
They're cosplaying, what's the name, aren't they?
What's
Blake
name?
7.
Yes, Master, they're wearing Blake 7 helmets with faceplate removed.
Federation Guards.
Well, they actually look like poorly created face shields, which are currently being used during the lockdown period. And also, as I said, the actual clothes they're wearing, especially with little sort of almost like medals across her chest, were quite similar to the baddies on the Death Star in a series or franchise of films called Star Wars.
Yeah, I never could figure out what these little symbols were supposed to be meaning.
No, they're generic, we are obviously militarized generic outfits.
Little cymbals, oh, surely it's some sort of percussion instrument, isn't it?
I mean, I expected Plantagenets to be mean something like I'm the leader or something.
Well, obviously he likes to get his hands dirty, doesn't he? So good on him. Anyway, right at the beginning.
His dad, Revere.
What? Anyway, right at the beginning of the story, there's a bit of a commotion, and Daddy gets...
Boyd Cole and the commotions?
Gets buried under a pile of rubble. But
after having fingers coming up through the floor to...
Yes. To help the sand down.
Yeah, he's got to get the sand down properly, yeah.
Sand down? Now, that's on the south of the Isle of Wight, where me and Debbie met.
Yeah, it's obvious. Never mind.
And, is there sand in Sandown?
Yes, there is.
There is, for change, yeah.
Unlike freshwater, where there's not a lot of freshwater, apart from what you can get through the tap. Can we get back to Doctor Who? Anyway, so, that chap from the Uneedin line, who looks a little bit like Mr. Fribbley, but it's not.
I'm afraid I saw him in Carry On films, so I've got completely different opinion.
Yeah, he was in a lot of Carry On films.
He was, but he was obviously very famous for being in the Uneedin line, which, of course, there was a series...
He was Uneedin, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. But, The Uneedin line is one of those BBC things that you see Doctor Who actors and actresses from all sort of. They did the circular, didn't they? They sort of appeared in all sorts of dramas.
Well, there's only 30 British actors, aren't there?
What? Anyway, right. So, yeah, so it's a bit of a thing. And, of course, is it Peter Gilmore that plays this character? Tells everybody not to mention it to anyone. The trouble is we've all seen it. So,
yes, yeah, we saw it.
Well, we're just the audience.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Tegan and Turlough are listening at the door while the Doctor's smashing stuff around.
What was going on there?
Got a little bit petulant.
Dropped by the sound of it.
Yeah. And then he sort of comes in. He's doing some tidying up. For some reason, he feels that part of this tidying up, because nobody wears a hat. In fact, he normally wears a hat, doesn't he?
I know.
Was to get rid of the...
But he rolls his hat up and puts it in his pocket.
Yeah.
But no, he says he's got a pair. He's got a second one somewhere. He's going to find it. That's what he said.
Yes. But the thing is, though, my coat stand in here is made of metal and it's from Argos, and three of the prongs are already broken, so I could actually do with that particular coat stand here in the...
Well, it's made of metal. Coat stand doing nothing.
Have you? You got what?
Fine, I've got one, a white wooden one, doing nothing if you want it.
Yeah, I would be delighted to have it. Is it a round one like that one?
I don't know, I can't see your one.
No, like the one that Peter Davison's holding in the scene.
Oh, yeah, it looks like that, yeah.
Yeah, I could do one of them. Thank you.
I could use one.
No, shut up, Kirby. I got in there first.
I'm not sending it to America.
Yes.
So.
That's what Amazon is for.
Meanwhile, they sort of dodge.
I had one. I don't
know. Be quiet! They dodge a meteor storm. And I'm just moving this forward a little bit because there's sort of lots of boring conversations going on the planet. And
conversation anyway. Luke, we're going to have company.
I'm not sure that I don't remember the special effects being this clever on the original, but there you go. But the weird thing about it, they've got this sort of planet Frontius, which they're watching through the scanner, and behind it is very fast moving galaxies. So that must be right on the edge of some sort of universe to see have galaxies in the background. Just saying, maybe, or is it just being pedantic?
At the very end of the. It's way past the. Aren't they in the same time as the Ark in Space, sort of?
Well, Ark in Space is only a couple of thousand years into the future, wasn't it?
No, not Ark in Space. Another one. Whatever. I don't remember.
Whatever, yeah. Laurinick says, keep vamping, Kirby et al. I'm giving my guinea pig a haircut and rinse and have you all in the washroom on high volume.
Oh, dear.
What an image that paints in my mind. And I do hope that guinea pig isn't a euphemism, Laurie. Right then. So, yeah, they're watching this this rather sort of derelict-looking planet from the... It doesn't look very inviting, does it? Were they watching it on the screen? Looks like it's dead, basically. And then this meteor shower hits them. And for some reason, the meteor shower affects the TARDIS, and like the Doctor says, it shouldn't.
No. So
What?
Master?
Oh, for God's sake.
The meteor shower is is being affected by the tractators. It's the TARDIS is being pulled down by the tractators.
Right. Do we know this at this stage?
No.
Right. So you've managed to earn yourself a deduction.
Yes.
Right. So well done, Kirby. Right. So at the moment, as we're watching the story, a meteor shower goes, and they sort of get affected by it, and the doctor says it shouldn't affect them. But it does, and of course, later on, we find out about the traitors, or the traitors, as Turlough said. But at this stage, we don't know why, because the doctor really doesn't want to...
My point is that the doctor was correct. It shouldn't affect them, because
yes,
it didn't.
Yes, I know, that's what I said. Anyway, right. So,
take them off for Mr. Pearson, please.
I think you needed a stiff drink before you started this one.
Where do I get up to? Oh yeah, so they basically, because the doctor does mention that it's the end of the human race. That's the last few humans left. So that makes Tegan want to go and visit them and say hello. The doctor says no, but unfortunately the meteors. Cause them to have to make an emergency landing, and as soon as they land, of course, with all those meteors sort of raining down, some people get injured, and the doctor suddenly turns for the first time into a medical doctor.
How do they get injured?
Get injured by the falling masonry and allegedly meteorites. They would have just got killed.
Anything aimed at them, and they go down like a sack of spuds.
Well, maybe
I believe it's like the pieces of rock that are kicked up when a meteor lands.
Oh, I love the way you try and defend it. Well done, Kirby. Get your point back for that one. Right then,
have another.
No.
That was too easy.
So, yeah, the doctor becomes a medical doctor, and unusually, Tegan and Turlough actually are very helpful at this stage. He sort of barks around a few commands, and they're sort of, well, Turlough's a bit, do I have to? But Tegan is very helpful and cooperative in this scene.
Can I ask something at this stage? Did the Fifth Doctor actually act a bit like the 11th Doctor around all this time?
Yes, I don't know how he managed to do that ahead of time.
Acting very different compared to how he usually acts.
No, this is one of the reasons why I liked the Doctor, this particular version of the Doctor, so much. He's very... I just like this Doctor. I especially liked him when he put his glasses on.
It kind of started in the last story where he started acting more authoritative, and yeah, I like that better too. So yeah, it's like reset.
Yeah. But anyway, so he's...
I believe he knows that the end of his... the end of his reign is coming, so he can...
act up a storm.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, he starts pretending to be a medical doctor and sort of starts treating the unconscious lady. And then that bird from Emmerdale turns up with a 1980s hairdo and a tray full of...
That's awful hairstyle, isn't it? Yeah. Like a toilet brush.
By Lindsay Dunlop. And he introduces... he just doesn't want to get involved initially, and then eventually he's introduces himself as the doctor. Meanwhile, Peter Gilmore goes off to... what's his name? The dad of Cedric Diggory. Yeah, Diggory's dad. and he's a bit of a sort of upstart. His dad's just got killed, apparently, allegedly killed, because we saw at the beginning of the thing, he gets sucked into the ground by some hands. Cedric Diggory's granddad fell to the ground.
Cedric Diggory's granddad got killed, yeah, I suppose.
Okay. Master?
Diggory fell down to the ground. Yes.
That actor, Jeff Rawl, has actually been involved with 3 Doctor Who projects.
Has he? Sarah Jane Adventures.
Sarah Jane Adventures as the museum curator.
Gallery.
Mona Lisa's Revenge. Mm-hmm. And he played Mervyn Pinfield in Adventure of Space and Time.
But there you go.
Okay.
Lauren Nick says... no this time, and then not this time. Got a cheap dick. I'm just scratching my neck. There we go.
Tell me what the heck this other show he was in is supposed to be.
Who?
What's it called?
Jeff Rawl.
Jeff Rawl.
Drop the Dead Donkey.
Yeah.
Had a funny feeling. It was a comedy series.
Oh, that was brilliant. A comedy set in, what was it, a newsroom? Yeah.
Drop the Dead Donkey. Why is it called that?
It means been a dead horse.
Mm. Oh.
Something
can we carry
lines.
On? Right then. Right. Oh, God. So he's mean, a bit of...
You mean equine set on necromasochism?
What?
It's not Doctor Who!
Equine set on necromasochism. That's beating a dead horse.
Can I go and shout at the neighbour for fly tipping our garden?
Strange things that happen on this show. Right then. So, yeah, he's a bit of an upstart. While the Doctor is faffing around trying to put some lighting together, because he's not impressed with the lighting, he tells Turlough off for shaking one of these phosphorus lamps, and then, of course, has to shake it anyway to make it a bit brighter. Anyway, he sends the kids back to the TARDIS to fetch some equipment, and the door's jammed, so they can't get any further than the console room. I'm just moving forward a little bit here.
But that door didn't make sense. That was the console room door, wasn't it?
It was a room out of the console room into the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was that led to the bedrooms and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Teagan and Lindsay Dunlop are fetched to get some green stuff. A bottle of green. They of course,
is it green?
Alone can create the finest green... At will. Sorry, that was a reference to Blackadder. But of course, they drop it on the floor and.
Well, being I was referencing Star Trek. So
and being a sort of polystyrene floor, the green melted through it quite easily. That jar reminded me of sort of almost like Morbius's brain jar, with all those wires and stuff coming out of it. Were you going to say something, Deb?
No, I just said it was a battery.
Did you? Is that what it was?
Mm. Supposed to be, yeah.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Did you pay attention to that whole scene?
I might have missed that because Deb came in to talk about stuff. Sometimes I get it.
My purest greed instead.
Yeah. Anyway, so just move on. There's a point in which, right at the end of episode one. Oh, yeah, because Plantagenet, i.e., the father of Cedric Diggory, thinks, as per usual, in all these Doctor Who stories, that the Doctor is to blame for everything. Natural Doctor Who
trope.
He
just turns up anywhere and he gets blamed for everything.
Yeah, like the way they just immediately turns it. You killed him.
Yeah, and Terry Miles says, the green get less and less as they carry it. Well, they would do if they keep dropping it. And Ality Butcher says, drop the dead donkey is referring to the dropping of an unimportant news story because something significant has happened.
Fair enough.
Does that make sense to you now then, Kirby?
Affirmative.
And a point there for Alan.
Basically, stop then. Plugging a dead horse.
Darn, I thought I was going to get a point.
Hang on, me DVD slider's jammed. Oh, here we go, it's moving now. So, so there's a meteor shower, and then, of course, they decide they're going to bugger off, and they head back to the TARDIS, but all that's left is the coat stand that Debbie's going to bring around my house at some point. Because apparently, the indestructible TARDIS has been destroyed by a meteor shower, and the Doctor's totally convinced.
What happens to Chameleon?
Him. Yeah.
Yeah, poor Chameleon. I didn't think of Chameleon,
He's
did they?
He's the hat stand.
How can the TARDIS get destroyed and not the hat stand?
For the whole thing.
But it does lead to one of the more amusing parts of the story because Turlough, when he picks it up, as the Doctor says, some residual TARDIS energy. The Doctor is not particularly considering he thinks the TARDIS is destroyed. He's not particularly upset.
He doesn't seem to be, does he?
He doesn't.
Because he's a timeless child. He knows he will live virtually forever.
But does he know at this point?
He doesn't know now. But anyway, the great thing about this thing, I'd say I do love Mark Strickson, he is funny. But Turlough is sort of lured into using the hat stand as a weapon, which is, I really love that part of this.
Yeah, for the
really
next
good.
5 minutes or so.
I love it when the Doctor basically says, you can put that down now.
Yeah.
And weirdly.
It's not waving that thing around, yeah.
Why that, why that works at all.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I have a clip. Here it is. Oh, hang on, it's not. Here it comes.
What was that?
Oh, just residual energy from the TARDIS.
What is he thing that brings down the bombardment.
Yes, it's a coat stand. but yeah, so it's really funny that Turlo uses it as some sort of weapon against about 50 people.
Oh, that's brilliant. That was my favourite bit, I think, actually.
Meanwhile, Tegan is just sort of mooching around the lab, I suppose we could call it a lab, and some pervert grabs her ankle from underneath.
Yeah, imagine what his view is.
Yeah. Kirby!
Well, it is short.
Graceful. Family show. So, yeah, of course, and then we have another scene which the doctor's, oh, I suppose you're going to kill me, blah, 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 blah.
I said that.
Yeah, I know you did. That's why I said blah, 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 blah. And hang on, just moving forward a little bit. I can't remember whether she ended up... because I haven't noticed at this point that bodies are sort of disappearing through the ground.
We don't see that many of them.
Apart from Peter Gilmore noticed, didn't he? No, he didn't see him go through the ground. He just disappeared, didn't he?
Yeah, they used kind of little wavy things and he vanished.
And everyone
did it better in Modern Who.
Yeah, I did forget to mention that Turlo still hasn't changed his clothes.
Ew.
We all went to school with somebody who did that, though, didn't we?
Oh, God.
Yes. How do we know he doesn't have multiple school uniforms?
Well,
like the doctor must have.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, I think it's possible that in the wardrobe there might have been a few blazers and trousers, but to have that exclusive tie, maybe not. I mean, on Star Trek, they can replicate things, can't they? Anyway, so...
Tarkus has an extensive wardrobe.
Yeah. Have you also noticed that Turlo's brushed his eyebrows upwards?
That's for dramatic emphasis when he
gets... It's always like that.
Yeah, they are. They're always like that.
Although, that's the first time I've noticed it. Anyway, so Plantagenet, meanwhile, has a bit of a funny turn, shall we say. He sort of has a... He's got a dodgy heart, hasn't he? A dicky ticker, as they said on Hello, Hello. So. Oh, you've heard of Hello, have you? Anyway, so the Doctor, meanwhile, returns back to being medical doctor, probably for the first and only time in the history of Doctor Who, but makes a cardinal error when he decides to create a defibrillator and put cotton wool between the actual contacts of the defibrillator and Plantagenet's chest, which, of course, will... What would it do, Mary?
Fire!
It won't do anything.
Not necessarily. Huh? Better than having direct contact with the skin.
Yeah.
But it's dry cloth.
Yeah, well, and it may spark, it may not, but it's better than having direct contact with the skin. You never want that.
Tell you what, that is the... Thank you, Mary, for, for verifying that Doctor Who did their research properly. But it does rather look like that he's got a very, very thick wad of like kitchen towel between the contact and the chest, and we're just wondering whether there would be enough, you know, contact.
Yeah.
Maybe a damp cloth would have helped. Like, you know, the old tradition of Doctor Who with the damp
wet
ankle handkerchief. Cloths.
Yeah. A hanky?
Yeah. Anyway, so he sets about trying to save Plantagenet's life. Because he's nice that way.
Who named her sort of kid Plantagenet?
What?
Someone who really liked history.
Yeah.
This is Bidmead's last Doctor Who story, isn't it? No, I'll carry on.
What's his nickname then, Planty?
Mary, very funny. Right, the way to go. So yeah, he's not very well at this point, old Plantagenet. Hang on, I've got a bit of trap wind. It's not trapped anymore. Right then.
What?
So, because the doctor saved his life by using a defibrillator. Meanwhile, they find this sort of hatch, don't they? Is it Turlo that finds it anyway? And they go down into the hatch and find some underground stuff going on. But while they leave Plantagenet sort of almost on his own in the lab, he has a bit of a heart attack or a little bit of something like that. I don't know. Anyway, it makes him sort of go a bit, roll off the bed onto the ground,
Master.
Conveniently by a load of gravel. Pardon? What?
No.
No. What?
The reason that he starts flapping his arm and rolls off the bed is that the tractators are pulling him down into the ground.
I didn't realize that, Kirby. You're not getting the point, but you're going to get one of these just for the sheer fun of it. I always thought it was because he had a heart attack.
But how he landed on his back when he only had one roll to end up on the ground.
Yeah, but maybe his back's heavier than, because of gravity, isn't it, Mary? Yeah. Maybe his back's heavier
maybe
than his front.
Maybe it's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
It called for it in the script.
Got to have internal logic.
Maybe it's easy. Maybe as far as an actor goes, it's easier for a person to act face up than to face down, perhaps. I don't know. Several reasons, really.
I just wondered, because his palate is like right there practically on the ground, and he rolls off of it. It's like,
okay. Anyway, so then Isabella sounds came like into the room. I'm doing a joke, Kirby. You've got to be very careful to interrupt my jokes. I'll tell you what, I don't put a lot of jokes into this show, but every time I do, they always get interrupted by Kirby.
You did the same joke that I did about 5 minutes ago.
Right, here we go. Oh, that was a wrong jingle. You got lucky. Right. Anyway. So he was lying on the ground, and then Isabella came into the room and said, Planty fell down to the ground. And I don't think she can hear that. And
Jack hided about 5 minutes ago. I thought so, yeah.
Someone untuned him, basically. The TV signal went a bit funny and he just sort of disappeared into the...
Sounds like
when you're describing what he's laying on, it sounds like you're describing some sort of taste. I mean, he's on an earthy palate.
Anybody got a tumbleweed?
Can I mention something?
But you're going to do it anyway.
No, all right. you remember Planet of Evil when they died? This reminds me a bit similar.
Yes.
Because they sort of disappeared after they carved it, didn't they?
Yeah, but they didn't. They died in Planet of Evil, didn't they? Where these people are just going underground
into the ground. They were sort of like on the ground.
It reminded more of a... that story that Isabella used to say Amy fell down to the ground, because they got the idea from this. Anyway, back to so Turlough and Lindsay Dunlop are now underground, finding all sorts of weird stuff going on. Oh, good grief! And then the sliders jammed again. Right, anyway, so I'm moving again there. And I love the bit where they walk past what looks like a couple of random rock columns, and they turn around and these absolutely terrible. they do look like Wirren. My goodness.
They do, yeah.
Just sort of waddle after them.
Fat ones, though.
Yeah. So, hang on. One of the dogs wants to come in. Bear with.
Are you coming in?
Right, Star has joined the podcast. So they go down and they get followed by these awful looking creatures. And
who signed off on them?
I don't know, but there's been worse, as we said.
Yes,
quite recently.
And why does the leader, when the Gravis, have a nose and the others don't? Awesome.
Maybe the actor had a humongous hooter and they had to put a nose in so it could fit into the costume.
That's one of the ways you can tell the Gravis apart.
Right. I just wanted to point out before we have the dribbling Turlough. I've seen them. Tegan gets her phosphorus lamp thingy and leans over the entrance to the underground area. Behind her, ladies and gentlemen, are the square things that we've been looking for in Doctor Who throughout the 70s and 80s so far. She's CSO'd, and behind her is the square things. You're not listening, are you?
Oh, there they are.
Did you not notice them? You do now. Now I've pointed it out, yeah?
Yes,
no,
I see them.
Isn't it sad that we're talking about random bits of scenery in this particular section?
They've been around since the Wirren.
I think it was before then. It was certainly since the Pertwee era. All right, I'll carry on.
The one guy was in lots of Carry On films.
Thank you for that. So, and then Turlough wanders out of the corridor in that scene that we talked about at the beginning of the story. Here's a recap.
I heard that.
My eyebrows have been up just upward.
I've seen them.
And so have we, and they're awful, and I can understand why you're going, it's the worst monster Doctor Who ever. Oh, I forgot to turn the volume now. Can understand why he gets upset, because they are scarily bad.
I am enjoying and embracing my acting moment.
Yeah, and he has to really act to hide the fact that they're not at all scary. But apparently it's...
We're due for some really worse things coming up with Twin Dilemma.
Shut up, Kirby.
Oh, God, don't talk about that.
Yeah, but
talk about it at the time.
It's apparently disturbed him enough to sort of it's a tribal memory or something like that. I think they were trying to imply.
It's a bit like Quatermass in the Pit.
Yes, it's a direct reference to Quatermass in the Pit.
Yeah. So the Doctor and Tegan's been sort of taken over. The Doctor says, Tegan Hyde, of course, because he's been spotted by the scary...
Hang on, Adam.
What?
Go for it.
That was the same as Ark in Space. They had an ancestral memory as well.
Oh, well, there you go. Maybe they're related.
Yes.
They look so much like them. I maybe think they are.
So if the Doctor's been spotted, that's why he's wearing a leopard skin.
Oh my goodness me! Where's the tumbleweed sound effect?
Oh my goodness!
I don't think I have one, but I think perhaps because what we know, Debbie, do you know what we used to sarcastically play in these instances? But now we reserve that sound effect for actual humour, Kirby. So you're not getting one of them, and I will have to try and find one.
That was a Goon Show joke. Come on.
Oh, it's a Goon Show. It's your excuse for bad humour every single time, which is a bit of an insult to the Goon Show, to be fair. Right, anyway, so the Doctor sort of starts...
The line was, Nettie, why are you wearing that leopard skin? Ah, that's
care.
Why I've been spotted.
Anyway, so the Doctor starts regenerating. Oh, sorry, that's the same effect, but not actually that happening, sorry. While he and Tegan are supposedly held by some mental power the Tractators are able to impart.
It's not Tegan, is it?
It's what? What did you say?
I didn't think they got Tegan. I think they just got the Doctor.
The Doctor and Tegan are sort of huddled together during that scene.
Okay.
They're sort of like... Anyway, moving on. Moving forward a little bit. Yeah, so meanwhile, Lindsay Dunlop is sent to babysit the Dribbler. I mean, Twitcher. I mean, Turlough. Lillian Robbins says, "What's a Goon Show?" Oh, don't start that, Lillian.
No,
you might have to private message Kirby on that one, but expect an extremely long answer.
It's a British thing, Lillian. It's a British thing.
It's British anarchic comedy, and it's brilliant, and that's all you need to know right now.
The Doctor, though...
The Goon Show.
The Goon Show, yeah. The Doctor manages to hide behind a giant black golf ball, which the Tractators use some purple energy to force towards them. And then it's quite funny, it's because when he turns purple, it does again remind me of the Redirect adverts, Debbie.
Yes, I noticed that. There's an awful lot of that.
Are we to believe that the purple thing is a gravitational beam?
We're supposed to.
Anyway, the Turlough hasn't started dribbling yet, but when he does, it's hilarious. Oh, she is dribbling now. Oh, God, I wouldn't like to have been one of the actors close to him while he was doing that dialogue and foaming at the mouth.
Well, apparently the first take, he spat on the camera.
Yes. Legend. At least, you know, you could always say, I'm sure when he does conventions, that does crop up quite a few times, his dribbles.
Yeah, he mentioned it in the making of documentary.
Yes.
And why do they zoom up close on him? Yuck.
So they could see he was doing that all that energy into the dribbling.
Yeah.
But we've had lots of actors spitting in Doctor Who. Obviously, Timothy Dalton quite famously as a wrestler. So he certainly wasn't going to be the last.
Thing now, the actors have to try to spit dramatically on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Black Guardian did.
So, anyway, the white-haired bloke and Lindsay Dunlop carry a Turlough away from the area, and he's still a bit delirious. I think he's slightly possessed by his tribal memories.
Yeah.
And Peter Gilmore, is trying to take charge of everything. It's quite funny, actually. It does remind me of Fibberley, but sort of because of the curly hair and the way he's talking.
Yeah, that's true.
He's much taller than
you. I know he's much... so pedantic. Meanwhile, somebody falls over. Oh, it's the bloke, you know, the sort of thinning of on the head bloke. I can't remember. Sort of the character that I sort of just noticed
Cockerel?
He falls to the ground and gets... a bloodied nose, and then get sucked into the... But this time, the special effects are different, and people see it happen. It's completely different. They didn't actually use those strange sort of untuned. He looks a bit like John Davey in some of these scenes, actually. And then
he does
go a bit fuzzy.
John Davey's a time traveller, so you know.
Yeah, it does go a bit fuzzy while he's disappearing in, under the ground. Fair enough. But I notice
he
also
doesn't disappear into the ground because the particular tractator is interrupted.
Yeah. Taken complete.
Fair enough. But I did also notice some of the village people were watching these particular proceedings.
Yeah.
But something distracts the tractators and he doesn't actually get sucked into the ground.
I just said that.
So the village people are quite... They think he's some sort of god, don't they? Because he gets spared.
They automatically make him a leader, don't they? It's like...
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he can survive this. He can do anything,
All right, let's move forward a little bit. Right, so Plantagenet, meanwhile, is being held like Joe 90 in some sort of strange sort of... Joe 90 is a Gerry Anderson TV series, if anybody wants any referencing to, in some sort of weird sphere. Which got me to thinking, there was a great series in the 70s and 60s called Time Tunnel. I think they should try and bring that back. I used to love Time Tunnel.
I liked Time Tunnel.
Time Tunnel was very good.
That's what I just said.
We were agreeing.
We're agreeing.
Sorry, I'm just trying to a gap fill with these. I'm not saying this story's bad. I keep calling them Weir and the Frontier. Not Frontier. What are they bloody called again? Tractators. But at least their mouths try and move. Oh, they're a bit bigger than the Weir, aren't they? They got weird goblin-y faces.
Adam?
Yes?
Terry Miles says, sorry, Adam, isn't it Leslie Dunlop?
What did I call her?
Lindsay, I think.
Yes, well done. I'll put that in just to see if anybody would notice. And you did. Well done, Terry. You got one of those. So, yeah, these goblin-y faces they've got, as I was saying. I presume that the one with the pink face is the girl and the one with the green face is the boy. Is that how
I like their skirts. I like the way they've disguised the fact that feet are going underneath.
Yeah.
I really do like that. Yeah. It's not one size fits all, but it doesn't.
Master?
Yeah.
They actually hired dancers who were supposed to curl up like woodlice.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, when they got the costumes, and they practiced curling up and everything, when they got the costumes, they discovered they couldn't do it.
Oh.
Well, probably could curl up. The costumes wouldn't let them, I would imagine.
That would be so effective if they'd been able to do that.
Yeah. I think Turlo starts coming to his senses towards the end of episode 3. Yes.
Besides being influenced by woodlice, they were also influenced by these little roll-y-up creatures in M.C. Escher prints, and it would be Bidmead also referenced Escher with Castrovalva, so he likes M.C. Escher.
So do I.
Right, you can come back from your cups of tea now, everybody, and we'll continue with the show. so Turlo's now back to his normal self. And the Doctor and Tegan are wandering around the catacombs. They sort of... I can't remember what was the reason why Plantagenet was kept in the Joe 90 cage?
Because he's going to take over in the machine that his dad did.
His dad.
Oh, yeah, his dad was not feeling too good, was he?
The excavating machine.
Somewhat dead.
Yeah, we do see it. It's quite creepy, isn't it, with that, actually, when the Doctor and Tegan...
That was horrible. It reminded me of a war machine, actually, that thing.
Yeah, but it also reminded me of something else that they've used. It was, what was it? It was a more recent Doctor Who. Was it the Christmas special?
Oh, you mean the one where Adric's driving the...
No, because Adric didn't have his head severed. I was talking about Voyage of the Damned, wasn't it? Is it Voyage of the Damned?
Voyage of the Damned.
Yeah, which they nicked, obviously. So this has obviously been quite influential, this particular story, in future episodes of Doctor Who.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, of course, then we do...
Master,
yes.
One thing they don't show, have we gotten to the excavating machine yet?
No.
Yeah, we haven't. Well, we've got the Plantagenet's dad's head in the...
Yeah, well, one thing that they don't show is that they actually have two more actors in the side of it. They hired two actors. They're in there, but they never show the side of it.
Oh!
I know.
We should get
there are publicity stills.
I presume that. Sorry, I interrupted you then, didn't I?
No, that's
now
fine.
You know how it feels.
I know how it feels.
They just did a sort of zoom into Daddy Plantagenet's face to end the episode.
His name is Revere because he's been Revere.
Oh, yeah, Revere. Yeah, sorry.
Daddy Plantagenet, that works better.
And the other thing is that the actor who he's hired for to be in the two different scenes in the first episode and the third and fourth episode, but he has no lines whatsoever.
There you go.
So he's not even credited. And yet his face is up on posters all over the college.
John Beardmore.
Yeah.
Sorry, I did lose the plot somewhat with this. Oh, yeah, because they do take...
Didn't we all?
Daddy Plantagenet out of the machine. Wasn't there an idea at some point to put the Doctor in the machine instead of Plantagenet?
No, it was Tegan.
Oh, Tegan. And he was one of them.
He made out the Tegan
robot.
But Tegan's a robot.
Yeah. He bought time to fiddle with the machine a bit, try and work it out by describing Tegan as a robot, and she's just there looking puzzled throughout the whole of part three. She just looks confused. So, you know, nothing.
Yeah, one scene that was cut was the Doctor telling them Tegan was a robot, and to the point where he even, like, puts a screwdriver in her ear to kind of pretend like he's winding her up, but they cut all that out.
Yeah.
Oh, I would have liked to see that.
They were afraid the children would imitate that.
Blimey. Ridiculous. Right, I do love the Doctor and his glasses in this. That's the first time that the Fifth Doctor's worn glasses, and it does suit the character really well.
Is it?
Half moon glasses.
Have you read them before?
I don't remember him seeing
I'm
this
pretty
particular...
certain he's worn them before.
He wears them a lot in this episode.
Yeah, he's worn them before.
I'm pretty sure he wore them in the... Was it...
Visitation.
The one with the black flower. I can't remember what that
Black Orchid?
Black Orchid.
Black Orchid.
Black Orchid. I'm sure he wore some then.
Oh, I can't remember. But it does wear them a lot, and it's noticeable in this story. Because obviously, you know, you say he's sort of like channeling various other doctors. The one he channels the most is a mixture between Hartnell and Troughton, really. And it works really well. There's a lot of Hartnell in this particular version.
And
of the
they
doctor.
Made sure that he pulled those out in Time Crash.
They made sure, did they? Well, we've got stuff coming through on the feed.
But okay.
Lillian Robin says she'll Google it, i.e. the Goon Show. Terry Marr says, sorry, Adam, it isn't Leslie Dunlop. Oh, isn't it Leslie Dunlop? And then there's a little emoji of a cup of tea in reference to...
That's when you said to go and grab a
Kirby
cup of tea.
Stuff. Anyway. So there's a point in which Plantagenet, they try to attach him to the machine. But he does get rescued. Because what do they do to the poor tractators? Because they won't end up face-planting on the ground.
Yeah, push him over.
Does he switch the gravity off or something? I don't know. No? Okay. And there's another point in which...
Around that time.
No, they're all supposed to be controlled by him, and because he passed out, they all passed out as well. That was the way it was represented.
But someone put Peter Gilmore in the machine. And Turlough and the Doctor tried to rescue him.
Yeah, supposedly.
He supposedly does it.
Turlough obviously pushes him in.
But he gets a sort of a hug from behind from the Doctor, which looks a bit weird. And then he gets the Doctor drags Turlough away.
Well, it looks like the Doctor's trying to rescue him from the machine, but then it seems like he's no, you know, and he's pushing the Doctor away.
Yeah.
So it seems kind of weird.
Yeah, no, he does. He says, go.
Yeah, why would he do that?
I'm stuck. I'm not getting out, basically.
Yeah.
He sacrifices himself.
So he turns nice all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know. He goes from a real butthole to this nice guy.
Basically, when Turlough joins them down in the catacombs, he suddenly goes nice. It's really
weird, isn't it? Anyway, so meanwhile, Tegan is scuttling around the caves and stuff and stumbles across what looks a bit like the TARDIS. A bit of roundel and a door behind some rocks. And then she gets sort of pinned against the TARDIS wall by... a tractatus, but she doesn't start foaming at the mouth or anything like that. And the door opens. I think, is the Doctor behind the door when the door opens?
Yeah.
How did he get there?
He's with the console.
Yeah.
How did he get there, though? Did I miss something?
He went down a different corridor. It's probably a cut scene.
Oh, because Plantagenet and Turlough are also in the console room. I was a bit confused by that bit.
Why not? They were with him.
So the TARDIS is not destroyed. It's just got a load of rocks inside it, which actually look similar to what they tried to do with the ninth and tenth Doctor's TARDIS to a certain degree. And do you remember in the one where the Doctor's wife, where the TARDIS kept on sort of transfer? Well, they kept on finding rooms, didn't they? The console rooms in the TARDIS, including the ninth and tenth Doctors. It was. Mm. Am I talking to myself here? Surely we have watched all these.
I'm saying yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
God's sake. Right. Moving on. Sorry.
We're agreeing.
All right. I've got that you're agreeing.
He's not used to it.
He's not used to it yet.
Yeah.
Silent accord rather than hey.
Yes.
So, meanwhile, a tractator's
back.
Has some sort of... The Doctor tries to dematerialise the TARDIS to fight against his gravitational thing, and a tractator starts wobbling around in the console room. All the rocks dematerialise within the console room itself, and there's a bit of wobbly camera stuff going on, and...
Hold on.
Everything's all right.
No, I hate this in every show. I mean, you get it. Star Trek and all this... Whenever you see something wobble around, it's clearly just the camera wobbling around and people moving around. You look at, they've got like drinks or containers full of liquid.
Yeah.
And the liquid's just dead still.
Things I think they've done slightly better with that in more recent special effects. I know what you're trying to say, but essentially all these things, Doctor Who, Star Trek, whatever, are all theatre on screen. So when you go to a theatre, the special effects are used to create things. You just have to use your imagination a bit. And camera wobbling is...
use my imagination.
Yes. Well, no, the camera wobbling will always be there. I think it's just the most effective way to... I mean, you look at I love Marvel, but I don't mention I love Marvel stuff. It's all handheld or fake handheld shots in Marvel now when it's like an action scene, and the camera's wobbling all the time, so it's nothing compared with that sort of stuff now. It's just to bring dramatic effect. Camera wobble will be with us forever, sadly. They don't use tripods anymore, but they do. So the Doctor at the end of the story gives Debbie Melrose a white coat stand thingy. Sorry, it was paint.
I will get it out of the bed, out of the shed.
And that's the end of the episode, really. So yeah, okay. So Frontiers.
What happened to Cockrell? Because he was in the TARDIS.
I don't know, Mary.
Going through all of that stuff.
I don't know, Mary.
They probably kicked him out.
He just kind of vanishes. He's not with the village people outside anymore, and he's not in the TARDIS anymore. No comment about what happened to him.
It was probably a deleted scene. Laurie Nick says, back from tea and snack break. Well done, Laurie. And Terry Miles says, they look like the rocks from the church in the last episode. Well done again.
They could have been.
Probably Cockrell is off in a back room with the kid from last week's story.
Maybe so. That sounds a bit dodgy, though, Kirby, to be fair, the way you said it. Ryan, so Frontiers, it's not too bad. It's a bit silly in some way. The only thing that is really, really bad is those tractators themselves. And the fact is that the comedy side of it, the fact that Mark Strickland sort of made them out to be so scary by his acting, made them so under-scary. You know what I mean? They just sort of built them up to be... these really, really scary monsters.
Terrifying.
Yeah. If he hadn't done that scene, I think we would just accept them as they were. But it just... Yeah. What? Is this there? Is there not something more scary? The scarier thing was the head, the severed head in the machine. That was sort of...
Yeah, that was the scariest thing.
Yeah. So.
If we didn't see the skirts on the tractators, might have held their... fearsome a bit more.
I mean, if Turlough said, oh, severed head in machine, and they started dribbling and stuff like that, then, fair enough. But, it was okay. Well, it certainly wasn't as bad as a story we did a few weeks ago. It's so bad I've even forgotten it. Oh, yeah, Warriors of the Deep. But it was okay. It was just a bit of a filler episode. I accept what they were trying to do with it, and some of the acting was okay. It was.
What were they trying to do with it?
Wasn't boring. In relation to the story they were trying to tell, I quite like the Doctor in regards to the portrayal that Peter Davison was trying to create for this the Fifth Doctor. As it was getting better and better, they just snatch it away from us at the end of this series, which is very frustrating. But yes, it was okay. I wouldn't, you know, seek out this story to go and watch it, to be fair, but as we've watched it now, and I think that it may indeed be the last time we ever see it. But okay. What did you think of it, Robert?
Oh, I remember when the DVD came out, I was quite looking forward to it because I remember it being a pretty good story.
Yeah.
And then I watched it again. No. It's not too bad, but I mean, it's let down by a lot of design things, like, the, as we mentioned, the tractators, the actual look of them. Mm. If they had the money to do them better, but then again, they shouldn't have really been written, considering he knows that, you know, they wouldn't have been able to manage that on their budget. Mm. And another thing is the studio sound picks up everything, so you can clearly hear that when they're supposed to be walking on rock, that they're walking on wood.
Yeah.
And that spoils the, you know, the illusion of things. Mm. And I did like the TARDIS being in bits all over the place. I thought that was quite well done. And a bit of dodgy hairstyle with Leslie Dunlop. just looks like a hairbrush, seriously. Because she's quite a good-looking girl.
Well, she was then.
But, yeah, Turlough's overacting was just...
Legend.
And zooming in on the spittle was just even more disgusting. It was just...
Yeah, I just thought they could have backed it up, couldn't they, with obviously him coming out going, oh, and then it all dribbling, and then someone else went, oh, I've just seen Turno dribbling.
And I got to say also to Tegan's outfit, it's so impractical for climbing up and down stairs and crouching down everywhere.
Mm-hmm. There was an awful lot of ladders in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the director said, oh, we'll get a nice short skirt on her and remember walking up and down ladders.
Yeah. Of course, if you think of it, Turlough's viewpoint, I mean, she's traveling around. She doesn't know where the TARDIS is going to land. You know, is she going to wear, you know, long pants and trainers, you know, just in case they land somewhere like this?
Well, there's two more. It's going to be before I forget. Oh, there's two more things that have been, that this thing has, you know, I've talked about things that have been influenced by the story. The Naked Gun 1, obviously we're talking about Tegan's skirt.
I love
and,
the Naked Gun. Yeah, the beaver. Yeah. Nice beaver.
You said it.
Yeah, I just had it stuffed.
And Waters of Mars with the dribbling.
Oh, that was awful.
Yuck.
Sorry, carry on.
That's it. Yeah.
That was it. Right then. Well, no, we talk about while Kirby sort of puts his point across, going to get a cup of tea. I'm actually going to go while Kirby puts his point across to get a bit of water out of the kitchen because I'm a bit thirsty. So, right, Kirby, what did you think of it?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
But he's not going to hear my opinion.
No.
Well, if you keep rambling, you won't get around to it until he comes back with his book.
I could do that. What was it I was going to point out? Something that we were just discussing.
How do we know?
I just tripped over the car.
Good. Is that,
he hasn't got there yet, Adam.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good.
We mean he hasn't got there yet,
Gabby.
Actually, this is one of very few left that I had never seen before.
Wow.
Whoa,
hang on, that deserves one of these.
My only exposure to it at all, and my only exposure to the tractators, was when people were putting out compilations around the 50th anniversary with little short scenes from every story. Yeah. And Frontios came up and there were these things. I'm going, what are those? but overall, I actually like this one. If it hadn't been for the poor costumes for the tractators, it wasn't bad. They really did a lot on their low budget. They had lots of extras that they did a lot with all those sets.
And glass
multi-level
shots.
Multi-level sets. Well, one of those glass shots was pretty clever because you see all those girders inside the spaceship, and one of the glass shots extends from a physical girder on the set. That everyone has to duck under, which and they made a few too many cuts to make some of the story confusing, and the excavating machine left a little bit to be desired, except for the fact that that head was really creepy. But it wasn't the worst story I've ever seen. It wasn't the best story I've ever seen. It was adequate.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think of it then, Debbie?
I remember this one from first time round. Wow. I remember being a lot more scared of this it the time. First time round.
Oh, they're saying this time.
Yes. Yeah. This time, no, not at all. I thought that I absolutely loved the costumes of the Drag Princess. I loved them. I thought they were amazing, and I had a ball watching this one because I didn't take it at all seriously. Mm. the bit with the hat stand from the beginning, you knew it was just going to be anarchy, and it basically was. And it wasn't so much that it was too long, but they wrapped an awful lot up in the last 15 minutes again. And it happened. I know that's a standard Doctor Who thing. But I also felt the music this time. Normally, I'm quite au fait with the music and I like the use of it. I found that they kept switching themes because you went to someone else. And it was just too much this time. It was invasive, especially every time we went to Leslie Dunlop's character and that lovely sort of...
Handpads.
Yeah. I found that very invasive. Storyline absolutely mental, obviously. The whole idea of gravity having that much pull on the TARDIS all of a sudden, I wasn't buying that, but obviously it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey space, you know, science fiction TV show.
Doesn't have that much pull on it, but a little beam does. It's weird.
Nyla was going, why is the it shouldn't have pulled the TARDIS apart. Why did it do that? And I was like, oh, just enjoy the story.
Because the script required it to do so, and it's science fiction.
All back together again. I have to say, this story I actually just found funny. I didn't take it seriously. It's definitely not the best. It's definitely not the worst. It's not murder. I found it funny. So enjoyable, but I'm not going to go seeking it again.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. Now, we were talking earlier on, weren't we, trying to find an appropriate tumbleweed sound effect for Kirby. I've found a few candidates, shall we say. So here's candidate number one. I think it might be a little bit too windy, that one.
That's too windy. Yes. That is, yeah.
This might not be good enough. Oh, and that's just somebody blowing a whistle, sorry.
Well, you could use that.
I don't think I've got one.
All we just need is just a very light
gentle breeze. I don't think I've got a gentle breeze. It might be one in the Final Cut Pro sound effects.
Well, we
I've got storm wind. It's a storm wind one. A bit too windy, isn't it? I'm going to have to get one. We definitely need a tumbleweed for Kirby, don't we, Kirby?
You're a bit of a wind generator, aren't you?
I do generate quite a lot of wind. That's very true. I don't deny that. I'm able to actually create some. This is
well,
for instance, this.
Well, talking of wind, can I inquire as to parents as to how long it takes for children to stop farting all the time?
It doesn't stop.
I will just pre-warn with visitors, with listeners, that these are fake sound effects. I'm not generating these sounds myself, although I'm perfectly capable of doing so. Right, well, let's return to the podcast. I was just enjoying it. I found my sound effects folder. I've lost it. Priorities. Here it is. Right then. Sorry, Mary. Right then. So, Mary, what did you think of it? Where's the bloody sound effect gone? I can't find it. Oh, here we are. What did you think of it? That was slick, wasn't it, everyone?
Well, like Debbie, I found it very funny. It was a very funny episode, and I'm not sure all of that was intentional, though.
It had to be, didn't it?
Some favorite laughable scenes, of course, were Turlo, you know, defending everybody with the hats.
Yeah. You know, it,
And the villagers actually taking that seriously. but I think my favorite scene was the chief orderly Brazen, the redheaded guy, arguing with the science guy by accusing him of, you were keeping all this information secret. And the science person was saying, well, I was keeping the secret. I was just taking notes. I was just keeping the facts. It was, Plantagenet that was keeping it all secret. So then the guy jumps in and says, well, we had to because, otherwise there would have been anarchy. And I'm thinking, hold on, wait a minute. Which side of this argument are you on? and it went on like that for a while where he just kept kind of everything he was accusing the guy of, he ended up defending. So it's like, okay, I don't know where this is going. And also the same guy, after being, this hard as nails kind of guy, he doesn't care about anybody. All of a sudden he's telling the science guy, oh, you should look after your daughter. You shouldn't go down there. And it's like, wait, what? wasn't there some story that we've watched before where creatures were turning the planet into a space, traveling thing? I couldn't remember what it was, or maybe because I've seen this one.
Was there Fibulae?
Oh, yeah, Planet.
Yeah.
That one. So yeah. It's not a very original idea of creatures turning a planet into a space rocket.
Doesn't make any sense either.
No, it doesn't make any. And something that, I don't know if you'd find this interesting or not, but the original script had the creatures using all kinds of human body parts to run their different machines.
Bones and all that.
Yeah, to the point where there was a scene written where they would see like a human head being used as a pendulum on one of the machines. But when it came to filming all of this, they decided that was all going to be really objectionable to the public. So the only thing that they let get through was that head in the digging machine. But apparently, and I haven't read it yet, but it says it. But when he wrote the Target novel, he put all the human part stuff back in.
Oh, good.
So, we'll have to read that then.
Yeah, so apparently it's very gruesome under there. So, yep, that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
There was apparently supposed to be a translator thing with human parts next to the chief tractator's head.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay. Thank
you. That would have been pretty gruesome.
Yes. Have I done that one? Laurie Nick saying, best use of coat, rack, hat, stand in any science fiction fantasy TV show ever. then Lillian Robin said, Janet Fielding requested the leather skirt, but they got one shorter than expected. And then I got a notification that Matthew Kressel joined. It's funny with Matthew, actually. I find he's very articulate and he likes to talk a lot unless there's a chance of appearing on the show.
Yeah, he's always getting in he's joining us on our little private message thing, but he never comes on the show.
Yes, and I think he was just worried that Ben might be on at some point. I don't think there's much chance of that, to be fair, but there you go. Okay, so now we can move on to feedback. So, Kirby, I believe you put in some sort of request for feedback.
Yes, let me get over there. I've been posting a couple of pictures on there as well.
That's unusual for you.
Okay, let me refresh the page. I posted at one of the pictures of the little M.C. Escher creatures.
Yeah.
Okay, I will not read Ian's thing. Yeah. Rob Lansdowne says, the one with the wood lice. Jeff Waddle says, gravity rips the TARDIS apart? That's all I needed to know, so stop it. Ality Butcher says, but the hat stand survives. Jeff says, yes, he survives, but he leaves soon. Jefferson Lee Ing says Turlough goes crazy for a while and we see Mark Strickson's spittle. Yeah. Did he originally intend this to be a story for the Fourth Doctor? I believe so.
Really?
He also says Chameleon is disguised as the hat stand. Debbie says Turlough and his amazing space gazing. Laurie says illicit inhalant use was popular in the 80s.
But do you know why? Because, you know, the tractators, apparently the glue inside really overwhelmed them.
Robert Wince Jr. says, story was okay. Needed Nyssa to strip down in this one. Just kidding.
Yeah, definitely.
Even got a shock from the hat stand in this one. Felt like a bored feel in this one. Take out the lead bug and the rest fell apart. Mm-hmm. Remind me of the bug movie, Starship Trooper ones. Also in Newer Who, the Hungry Earth two-parter. Better than the last three stories, 3 out of 5. Lori Nick says, this one seems more sci-fi and intense in a weird way. Menacing pill bugs and hat stands. Pillbox hats. Sorry, my mind wanders. Still hard for me to retain interest. As Robert said, 3 out of 5. Good 80s punkette outfit this time around, Tegan. One of my friends has a cosplays in that outfit, by the way.
Cool.
So it's very similar Tegan's to outfit. Eleven's outfit in Series 3 of Stranger Things, just pointing out.
I'm skipping Ian. Neil James says, Frontios, this is a pretty grim story, but there are moments of very funny black comedy. The tractators are a very impressive design, and the thought of the ground eating. That's what he says.
Okay.
But don't blame me.
Everyone's allowed their opinion.
And the thought of the ground eating people gave me nightmares as a kid. Peter Davison is brilliant as always, and the scenes where he tricks the Gravis into repairing the TARDIS are great.
Yeah.
I love how he pretends Tegan is his slave and says that her walk isn't right. Turla's descent into madness is quite well done, if a little overacted.
Yeah.
And Norna is pretty cute. Good, not great, 3 stars out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then I posted a picture of the Fifth Doctor's first use of those Brainy Specs.
Brainy Specs, the half moon glasses.
Well, they were called Brainy Specs in Time Crash.
Fair enough, but they are.
Is that it?
And then the picture of the little roly up things.
The little roly up things. Okay. Okay, that means I can then refer to Terry Miles, who says, hi, 20 megabiters. This story is another base under siege as such, although it mainly occurs under the base under siege. It was good to see what Mr. Oneidin did to earn enough to buy a fleet of ships down in the West Country. Also, that the editor in Drop the Dead Donkey was from a space-fearing family. Or faring family, not fearing, sorry. A space-faring family. The tractators in the Target book written by C.H. Bidmead looked better than the ones on the TV. As always, the picture in your mind is better than the one on the BBC. Well, that's the benefit of books, isn't it? I read Planet of Spiders before watching it, but I still enjoyed the TV version, but the book of Planet of Spiders is fantastic. That's me talking, though, not anyway.
Yes.
Turlo going all scary-eyed and dribbling due to a race memory of the tractators was funny. It wasn't funny, Terry. It was hilarious.
Yes, it was. This was a funny story.
It was disgusting.
Funny imagery.
No, it was hilarious, Debbie. Tegan running around with those heels. Yeah, I'm amazed she didn't twist her ankle or make a hole in the polystyrene set. Now, it's funny you should say about that. We're currently re-watching Desperate Housewives because it ran out in 2004, so Isabella's never seen it. She suddenly got hooked on it because it's that good. But there's a scene in which Gabrielle Solis runs, literally sprints up the stairs wearing a pair of stilettos, which that reminded me of this scene quite a lot.
Yeah.
There are two places in the story where Tegan does trip on some of the rocks.
Okay. Some of the polystyrene, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. This would have been an excellent story if made with a decent budget rather than a few pennies they had. All in all, a good story, and we gained a little more info about the schoolboy who was still in his smelly school uniform. Pepper Potts next. Oh, we got Iron Man 1. Pepper Potts next. I'm confused. Thank you, Terry Miles.
Pepper Potts, Daleks.
Oh, sorry. I thought they were talking about... I thought Iron Man's missus.
You are so into Avengers.
I lost the plot there.
Put your reading glasses on.
By the way, I like Marvel. It's really quite good. Right, it's really nice when you avoid watching something and watch it and find that it's really very good. The most disappointing thing for me in regards to the Marvel Universe, and this is going to be very shock quite a lot of people, so I feel for the first time ever I can play this sound effect for myself. Incredible Hulk isn't that bad. Right then, so
I liked it.
Yeah, we got this.
Hello, 20 Megawatt Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Captain.
Hello, Ian.
SpaceX has just launched the first astronauts from an American launch pad in over 9 years.
Indeed.
Elon Musk of SpaceX has a new infant. How do you get it to sleep? You rock it. Pontius by Christopher Bidmain. At the beginning, the doctor makes a fuss of treating an injured woman. I wonder if she's the military judge near the end. Tegan wears a leather miniskirt.
She does.
She looks good in it.
She does.
But as this is an action-adventure story, the director has to be careful not to show too much Tegan as she crouches and crawls along tunnels. Captain Revere is held in high esteem. Captain Revere is worshipped. Captain Revere is revered.
Yes.
The idea of a captain of a multi-generation spaceship becoming an inherited kingship has been seen before in science fiction.
Yes, it has.
The captain's son is called Plantagenet and will become ruler when his father dies as the hungry Earth swallows him up.
Not dead!
He says he's not dead. He will be soon.
The Plantagenets were a dynasty of British kings. Henry the First, Henry the Second, etc. A dynasty is a series of related rulers. If Donald the First was succeeded by Donald the Second, or Ivanka the First, that would be a dynasty.
Right.
The Doctor claims that Tegan is a malfunctioning android. I wonder if that is a sneaky reference to the chameleon prop.
Ah.
Mark Strickson has some acting to do, as Turlough is haunted by his past. The people of Frontios are militaristic and wear uniforms in German field grey. The opinions expressed in this review are my own, unless I stole some from somebody else. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Ian referring to chameleon just maybe got me thinking, actually, and I have to say this while I remember
it. Did it hurt?
What? No, but... You know, obviously, chameleon's in the TARDIS. We don't see or hear of him apart from a deleted scene from Awakening last week. But the TARDIS has a faulty chameleon circuit. Why didn't they turn chameleon into the chameleon circuit and fix it?
Okay.
Just saying. It's only an idea. All right, let's see if anybody's saying anything on the...
I posted the video of Moxie and the Weirin.
Do it. How wonderful. Right then, Debbie, you've got something to read. Pardon?
No, sorry, I was talking to Tom. There was some guy trying to fly tip over the back fence.
I haven't got anything to say apart from call the police.
No, we've already dealt with it.
Oh, good. Punch in the face?
Well, the... communal bit at the back, and some guy in the gardens behind it thinks he can just dump empty a bag of cuttings over into that bit. No, that'd be too easy. A whole plastic bag full instead. He just dumped it over.
Do you know what I did when I got a load of stuff to get rid of? I booked a slot at the dump and took it up to the dump.
Yeah, took it to the dump like we
Funny
do.
Funny that, isn't it?
Oh, really?
Or just dump it around the back of Adam's place.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think you'll find there's any room for it in there, to be fair.
I'll distract him with the hat stand and Tom can... Ooh, look at this. Plantagenet fell down to the ground, or plagued surveillance with tractators. Dear 20 megabiters, Frontius is of course a closely studied critique of predatory capitalism, which has a great deal in common with the macro terror. Once again, there is a great deal of secrecy within the struggling society which serves the purposes of the clandestine class of tractators who are exploiting resources from the deprived proletariat.
Yes.
This notion obviously ties in with a major section of The Time Machine by the Sixth Doctor's friend and renowned socialist Herbert George Wells. The asteroid bombardments are the distinctive trait here, as they have been used to provide the unwitting and witless leaders of the government a supposed enemy, which is used as a distraction to subjugate the masses under the subterfuge of absolute necessity. It should be noted... Nice, I like that. It should be noted that while some suggest that tractators are poorly realised, in fact, it may be that an insectoid life form with a highly evolved capacity for the manipulation of gravity would look like an unconvincing and unwieldy costume with withered front appendages and that could barely stand up, let alone move. We also learn that Dr. Gordon, who famously owned a black horse and that bloke of the Onodin line, survived for many centuries, perhaps millennia, before eventually, no doubt, in the close shave that leads to the crash landing that set up the Frontiers colony, they lost their beard and sideburns, respectively. All in all, Frontiers is another reasonable variation on the classic Base Under Siege story, which employs a clever conceit that the threat comes from above, but in fact it turns out to come from below. I am not much in favour of mock-shocking catastrophe gimmickry like destroying the TARDIS, but at least it is used substantially in the trap that concludes the tale. However, Davison's presentation of that trap to the Gravis is coached in such a manner that it suggests the writer is assuming he has an extraordinary persona to deliver it convincingly, but instead he has the Fifth Doctor talking like he's on play school. Most of the cast hold things together well, though, but poor Mark Strickson is given an impossible freak-out episode in which he fully justifies his later move into the production of nature documentaries. This is the greatest triumph yet for Chameleon Stealth Mode as he pulls off the classic magic trick where the box he was in is destroyed with no harm to him. When it is pulled back together, he remains fully intact, as we will discover later at some point. This story is perhaps one episode too short, as who would not want to see extensive flashbacks to show that what sounds like a lot of flannel that Turlough is making up just to gain attention is in fact real. Next up, Doctor Who and the Dalek Easter Special, or whatever happened to the probable scientific elite leaders? Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Excellent. Does Mark Strickson do the commentary on that story, by the way? Anybody?
Did he? I missed that one, guys.
Yeah. It's only Peter Davison, Jeff Rawl, John Gillette, and Eric Sayward, and Dick Mills.
What, do the commentary?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
No, Mark Strickson.
Yeah. Hey, we're down to only three stories I've never seen.
And which ones? Go on, you want to tell us, otherwise you wouldn't have mentioned it.
I still haven't gone back to watch Wheel in Space, sorry.
Gone back to watch Wheel in Space? Oh, naughty boy.
What? You haven't
still
watched
it?
He
has to go back, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not quite how he's supposed to do it on this show, but yeah.
Okay.
When are you going to do that then, Kirby?
Time Lash.
Not the Time Lash.
And Paradise Towers.
Okay.
Oh, Paradise Towers is pretty good.
Well, I suggest that you go back and watch Wheel in Space. We've all watched them, haven't we, Debbie?
We watched them all.
I don't remember why I missed it. I wasn't on that weekend.
Okay. So I'm just wondering if I actually can say this sentence for the first time in many weeks without any interruptions. It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Oh, I didn't. Wow. Amazing. Astounded. I'm interrupting it myself now. Right then, so that's update on the new rule for the particular quiz, and that is we tried it last week, it went wrong, but it's going to go right this week. So, one round, the bonus pop question, it will be a taker off one of your fair other players. The other one will be adding to one of your fellow players. So that'll make it interesting, won't it? There's a fly just landed on my monitor. My
Mary's going to win!
Hang on, I need to kill this fly. How can I kill it without destroying my computer and therefore ending the show? I've got nothing to kill it with. I've got a high vis. Oh, it's gone now.
Leave the fly alone, Adam. It's fine.
No, it's going to annoy me. I know. I've got this high vis base, which I'm going to kill it with later. Right then, so that's basically the rules. And the other bad news for me personally is that sometime during between this episode and the previous one, I knocked over my pot of questions, and I did actually have one pile that I hadn't asked and one pile that I had.
No.
And they all went on the floor and were picked up together.
Alexa,
front room light on.
Okay.
Thank you. Right, I'm going to need you today, Alexi, because Alexa, heads or tails?
You got tails.
So tail. So therefore, that's a heads up that the
Mike just said tails.
Shut up, you. That the bonus pot will be on a minus on the first round. So the first question goes to Mary.
Quite contrary.
Oh, hang on, I haven't thrown the dice. Where's that gone? Here we go. All right, so Mary, you've got a pink one. That's what she said. She's got a pink one. And the pink is companions. And we may have had this question before, so I'll just we might get lucky. Which of the Doctor's companions does the Rani impersonate on the planet Lucertia? We haven't got to that story yet, but we may have watched it previously. Is it Lucertia? Lucertia.
No, that's on what's the name?
What are you on about, Mary? What?
That's on Time of the Rani. Isn't it?
What do you want about? Right, Mary.
Well, I know the actress's name, and I can't think of her character name.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you if you get the actress's name, because it's still the same impersonation at the end of the day.
If I can use the actress's name,
yes.
I'll play my Joker,
yes.
And it's Bonnie Langford.
It is correct. That would be Mary. Horrible to say, because it is definitely Bonnie Langford that the person. What?
Mel, thank you.
Mel.
Yeah. I thought you said no, Kirby. I thought you were going to get a point deducted for that, just for being mean. Okay, well done, Mary. Our next question goes to Robert. You've got a orange one. That's cast, crew, and beyond. Stop interrupting.
Oh, sorry.
Which British comic starred as the Absorbolov. Which British comic starred as the Absorbolov in Love and Monsters?
I know his surname's Kay, but is it Peter Kay?
Yeah!
It is Peter Kay. Sadly, you didn't play your Joker.
I'm Norman Kay because I've been watching Face This One.
You didn't play your Joker, so you only get the 1 point. Okay, Debbie.
Yeah.
You have a orange one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is... Apart from the appearance in Doctor Who, can I start that one again? Apart from appearances in Doctor Who, what musical achievement links comedians Hale and Pace and stand-up Peter Kay? That's a strange question I've ever asked this particular.
I'm want to play my Joker. I think it's Joker. It's Red Nose Day song.
Well, that's a very good answer. Ooh, I missed the bell. Is that correct answer?
You got the stonk, and is this the way to Amarillo, they say?
That's what they said, yes, right there. Kirby.
Master.
You have... what's it coming up on orange every single time? It's a stupid thing.
You can't throw it,
you pick them up.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Professor Yana was played by Sir Derek Jacobi, who also voices the Night... Sorry, I'll continue. There wasn't a full stop there. Who also voices in the Night Garden, but which of these is not a character from the show?
Well, also what?
Right, yeah.
This is mean.
Yeah, yeah, you
I
won't get this one. But yeah, Derek Jack.
I didn't understand the question.
Okay, basically, in the nutshell, the question is which of these is not a character in the Night Garden?
Yeah, so it's a, you've got a 25% chance of getting it right. Okay, so these are the characters.
I don't even know what the Night Garden is.
It's a kiddie show on CBeebies.
It's a children's TV show, which is incredibly insane.
Do you know why he's doing this, Debbie? He's trying to stall it so he can actually look up in the Night Garden.
I am not looking it up.
Right. Listen to the question then. Right. So the character. What?
Made no sense. Night Garden, what?
In the. Right, point deducted. For not listening.
In the TV series The Night Garden, which of these is not a character?
We're moving on. But that does put some points in the... it was a multiple choice. All you had to do is...
Understand it either, though.
Yeah.
There's a point in the bonus pot.
So
the answer...
And also, why don't we get the answers so we can at least know?
Yeah, you didn't do the answers.
Well, you didn't give me a chance! All right, what happened there?
Ding.
Oh, God, I don't know why I'm giving him a chance as he wins every blimmin' week. Right then. So are you prepared at this stage, Kirby, to listen to the multiple choice answers?
Yes.
Hooray! Hang on, that's at last going to get one of these. Why is it only playing the second half of these jingles? Right then, so the options are Iggle Piggle, the Tomley Boos, the Wandle Gongs, or the Pontypine. So one of those is not character in the Night Garden. So one, Iggle Piggle. Two, the Tomley Boos. Three, the Wandelgongs. Or four, the Ponty Pines. Which of
Go
those
on,
is
take
isn't?
A guess, Kirby.
The third one.
Yay! Is the correct answer. After all that...
Seriously?
Yeah. The
oh, God's sake. And now I like need to turn this water into wine, because that was very stressful.
Do you like to take a picture of my computer to show I did not...
I don't care.
I didn't look that up.
Right, I don't care.
She just shut the window off.
I don't care. So, the scores are no points in the bonus pot, thank goodness. So, therefore... It stays a minus because we haven't used it yet. And the scores are in last place jointly are Robert and Kirby on one each, and jointly in the lead, Mary and Debbie on two. And there's two jokers yet to be played. So let's roll the dice for Mary. Purple one again, Mary. How come it always lands on purple for you? Who did the Ninth Doctor say lived at 10 Downing Street when he visited in the year 1730? That's a sorry. That's a years and dates question, obviously. Oh God, you're not going to get that one. Sorry, you won't get this one. There we go.
Yeah. 1730. Golly, I don't know English history.
Nor do I in this instance.
I remember the episode, but I don't remember him saying it.
Israeli? And I guess episode. Israeli.
No, the answer is Mr. Chicken.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yeah.
I don't even remember.
What no, nor do I, so there we go. Right then, Robert, you've got a orange one again. What the hell is this dice
again?
Doing?
Again?
Yep. Right, I love that question. Right then, this is your question. What reptilian baddie was created by writer Malcolm Hulk?
I know. Can I play my thing?
Yes, you can, yes.
Joker?
Yes.
Silurians.
Well done.
Yes.
Right, Debbie. Yeah. You have got a. Oh, we've got yellow. At least something's different's come up. Episodes and stories question for you. In the genesis of the Daleks, what questionable mission do the Time Lords set for the Fourth Doctor?
Ah, that's easy.
Well, I don't remember the questionable mission.
It's probably just the mission. They say questionable just to colourise the question.
He's sent to prevent the creation of the Daleks.
That's what we're looking for. Although if it was Isabella genocide. Setting the question, you wouldn't
genocide,
get that one right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, if Isabella was the question master, you'd get that one wrong because she'd say it had to be exactly as it says on the card, which is to destroy the Daleks at the point of their creation.
Right. There you go.
There you go, indeed. Right then. Next the question goes to Kirby.
Like he said...
Kirby has a purple one, years and dates.
Oh.
In which year was A Christmas Carol by the Doctor's friend Charles Dickens published? All right, I'm going to give you a point if you can get within 5 years either way of the date, Kirby.
1856.
Well, there we go. What's the matter with this blimmin' jingle player? Let's try that again. Mm-hmm. Oh, I played right that time. No, you don't. That's not 2 points deductible, by the way, Kirby.
I was going to say, you got double whammy there.
What's the answer?
The answer was 1843, but a good effort there, Kirby.
By the way, didn't I just have that same question like last week?
You might have done,
but did I not explain at the beginning of the proceedings all the cards went over the floor?
You still got it wrong.
I didn't expect it to come back.
Still got it wrong. Second chance.
All right, okay, so the current... Oh, yes, 2 points in the bonus pot, which is a minus point for someone. And the question is a yellow, and it's this one. In remembrance of the Daleks, what has the Seventh Doctor pre-programmed the Hand of Omega to destroy when activated?
I know.
Yes?
Scaro.
Is the correct answer.
Oh, darn, I should have done my Joker.
No, you can't do a joke on a minus, can you? Because that's a bit mean. So 2 points off who then, Kirby?
Debbie.
Today be nice.
What took ages last week.
So who are you taking 2 points off?
Yeah.
Come on.
Me. He said me.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Sorry.
That's why we were laughing.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah, right. So that's fine. That's 2 points off, Debbie.
Because he knew he was safe from me.
you're close enough to attack him if needs be. Right. So the current scores are in last place with 1 point each, Debbie and Kirby. In second place is 2 points, Mary. And then the lead is 3 points, Robert. Right. So the next question goes to Mary, and it's a yellow one. Did we have that last time? I can't remember.
I didn't realize Robert was in the lead.
Thanks, Kirby.
It was Robert and Debbie both on 3 points.
Yeah, both of us were
right. Right then, Alexa.
Oh, okay.
Alexa, flip a coin.
You got heads.
Oh dear, so that's an add-on next time, if indeed there is any in the points or pots to do. Mary, this is your question. It's in The Sound of Drums, what kind of screwdriver does the master wield?
Oh my gosh.
I know this.
Oh.
Don't know.
Ah, that means I can play this sound effect. Oh, it's doing. I'm getting annoyed with this thing for playing half the sound effect. Right, the answer
maybe
is
you should switch to a PC.
The answer is, yeah. Well, then I have to wait for the updates to finish before we play it. Then that'll be cool. Laser screwdriver is the answer to that question. Yeah. Right, Robert.
Yes, sir.
You have a purple one. Who did the 12th Doctor meet in Sherwood Forest in the year 1190? For Christ's sake.
That must have been Robin Hood, wasn't it?
What a ridiculous question.
Yeah.
Very annoyed about that question.
Friar Tuck.
Yeah. Right then, well, Debbie.
Yeah, exactly.
Debbie, you've got a yellow one.
Okay.
Did you say Debbie or me?
It's okay. Me.
Right. What fact about the Doctor that the Silence are desperate to keep secret does River Song know?
Oh, we pay attention through most of these ones. that he remembers them?
What? No, that was a wrong sound effect. What the hell is this thing playing? That's what it should have been. No.
What was it then?
It was his name.
Yes.
I didn't really pay attention to
No, clearly not. Right, Kirby, you've got still got a bonus. A joker to play, and you've got a pink question.
Master.
What does Amy draw on the hand bot that she captures in and disarms when she is trapped in wherever she's trapped?
Since I don't quite remember it, I'm not going to joke her. Doesn't she put a smiley face?
That's what I'm going to give you that one because it's near enough. It was Rory's face, but it wouldn't have looked much like Rory, so I'm going to give you that one. Right. Well okay. done, Kirby. 2 points in the bonus pot to be added to somebody, so who's going to... Right, purple. So this is the question.
Does that mean we can add them to ourselves, right?
No, you can't add them to yourself. No, it has to be to one of your co-players. In fact, I think in future I will reserve Alexa's decision to after the question is asked. Because
that's
might
a good idea.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
No, I don't know either, mate. That's right. Here we go. In which year did the first Doctor and his companions find themselves on Earth but shrunk to the size of insects?
I know.
You know that one, do you? Yeah, what year was it, Robert?
I don't know the year, sorry.
No. Oh, for God's sake.
Anybody? Just say I know.
Go on, it's all right. Don't get a shit.
I know the story.
I love the story. I can't remember the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Does anybody know, please? Kirby?
I'm going to guess it's 1965.
Well, sadly, you'd be guessing wrong. So,
what was it?
Those 2 points, that's 64. Those 2 points stay in the bonus pot.
It was so close.
And we'll play Alexa's decision later.
5 years.
What?
The last time you had a 5 year gap.
Whatever. Mary, your question is going to be green. I didn't do the score. Sorry, in last place with 1 point, Debbie. In third place with 2 points, Kirby. In second place with... third place. Mary, and in the lead with 4 points, it's Robert. I'm starting to lose the plot. Green for Mary. How many limbs do the spider-like Rachnoths have? God, what a stupid question again. Mary, how many limbs do the spider-like Rachnoths have?
Eight.
Sadly, Not, no.
What was it then?
10.
That was misleading.
It was, wasn't it?
Yes, really.
I agree, that was exceptionally misleading. I do apologise, but it's not my fault. So why do they put in the word spider-like, and then it turns out to be 10?
Yeah, spider-like,
All they needed to say was, how many limbs do the Arachnos have? That's all I need to say. Right, anyway, right. Anyway, it's wrong, Mary. Sorry. Right then, Robert.
Yes, sir.
Green again. Getting a bit like that round the gills at the moment. How many bodies was Scaroth, the last of the Jaggeroth, splintered into when his spaceship blew up?
Oh, was it 12? I can't remember.
Was it 12? Well, 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 well. It was.
Yeah.
It is.
It was 12. Debbie.
Yes.
You have a purple one. In which year was the Time Rotor, a component of the TARDIS console, first mentioned? So you've got a choice of 56 years to go with, I think. I know. So what year was the TARDIS console's... the Time Rotor first mentioned in Doctor Who, basically?
It's hard.
Oh, my God. Are there any, like, options?
Maybe there should be. Or shall I create some for you?
No, don't worry.
I'll create some for... Shall I create some for them, everyone?
Let's say 1971.
Well, you should have waited for me to create some options for you then, shouldn't I? It was 1965. I wish that blooming bear would play properly. I'm starting to get irritated by it now. 4 points in the bonus pot. Oh, dear, my thing's gone funny. Right, so, yeah. Kirby. Still to play his Joker. It's a yellow question, which is episodes and stories. What is the psychic circus run by the gods of Ragnarok, better known as?
Oh, God. Play your Joker.
Oh, God, my brain has frozen.
That's it.
Reboot it.
I'm sorry.
Is this the story title?
I know, it's the story title.
What is going on with my sound effect folder on this particular thing? It's not even playing the countdown music. Did you get it wrong? Sorry, did you say you don't know?
Okay, Joker.
Yes?
Joker.
Yes?
Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
That took a long time, everyone, didn't it?
You've never let me wait that long to answer.
Well, the trouble was, Debbie, I started playing the countdown music, which only got halfway through, by the way, but didn't actually play anything. Let's try it again. It's not playing. What the hell is going on? There's something really dreadfully wrong with my sound effect folder today. There's wrong play. See, all of them are slightly not playing properly. I'm starting to get... really
maybe
cross.
Get a PC.
Anyway, right, so there's 4 points in the bonus pot. Oh, Alexa. Oh, no, I won't do that. I'll ask the question first. No. Nearly got there, didn't I? Oh, be quiet. Alexa. 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 Alexa, shut up.
Shut up.
When she goes, okay.
She didn't on that occasion. She just shut up. Right then, so this is the bonus pot question. There's 4 points in it. Don't know whether they're going to be pluses or minus.
Hey,
we'll find out in a minute.
Adam.
Right then, it's a purple question. What?
I was going to say, aren't you lucky one of our name isn't Alexa?
No, shut up. Right then, in Inferno, the Doctor claims that he heard the noise that affected Henry Slocum. Can I start that again?
Mrs. Slocum?
Right. Yeah. In Inferno, the Doctor claims that he heard the noise that infected Harry Slocum makes before during a volcanic eruption in 1883 at what volcano? That's a very long question.
I think I know.
Kino, go on then, Kirby. You know, what is it then?
Krakatoa.
Right, so there's 4 points. Where are they going to go? Oh, be quiet. Right. Alexa, heads or tails?
You got heads.
Right, so that means it's an add point to somebody. 4 points to who? Do you want to know what the scores are?
No, don't do that.
No.
Kirby?
Yes, I would like to know who the scores
were. Okay, right. And in last place, with 1 point, it's Debbie.
No, we're playing this till doomsday.
It'll be quite you. In third place with 2 points, it's Mary. In second place with 4 points, it's Kobe, which doesn't count on this occasion. And in first place with 5 points, it's Robert. So who's going to get 4 points then, Kirby?
Debbie.
Okay, right. It's getting very...
Debbie, you just have to get one question correct.
Yes, I'll just press the eject button, see, and Frontius has just been pumped out of the machine.
I'm not good at general knowledge, so there you go.
You keep on coming up with these excuses, but anyway, right. So, Mary, your question.
Is it correct that if I had given those to anyone else, they would have won?
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
So you want to play this till doomsday?
No, I don't think that's going to happen this week. Okay, Mary, you've got a pink one. It's, what is the name of the scientist that Joe Grant meets whilst fighting giant maggots and then falls in love with? Now, I'll give you the point if you get one, either his first or second name right.
I know.
Oh, wow.
It's easy.
Stop
goading her.
Well, I'll throw out Robert. I don't know.
I'm going to throw him out as well, but that's not the answer.
Clifford Jones.
Clifford Jones was the correct answer, but we don't get anything for it. Right, then. Okay, Robert. Oh, God. In potential chance of winning the game, you have a pink one as well. Oh, and I dropped my cards. Okay, here we go.
Which one of
what?
Us?
What is the name of the space station that Nyssa chooses to stay on when she leaves the doctor to help the Lazars, help cure Lazars disease?
Isn't that Terminus?
Andy won!
It's a correct answer! And the great final scores, done. Therefore, this week are in last place with 1 point, the bonus pot. In fourth place with 2 points, it's Mary. In third place with 4 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 5 points, is Debbie. But quite deservingly this week, and very upsetting to Kirby, the winner this week is Robert with 6 points. Right, there doesn't seem to be anything else coming through on the live feed, although I think my thing's malfunctioning, so I can't actually see everything, but there you go. The last bit of news I got was Matthew Kressel joining. But we can now move on to Doctor Who news.
Too bad he doesn't ever come on the show.
Well, he did when we did 450. Oh, no, the birthday show. We did the birthday show, didn't we? Okay. So we've got a Doctor Who audio guide. Doctor Who Appreciation Society has published the second volume of the Doctor Who Audio Guide. The Doctor Who Audio Guide by Colin John Francis was first published by Dwas in 2005 and covered every official Doctor Who title, audio title from 1963 to 2005, with an updated version extended up to 2008 being published in 2010. The Society is now pleased to publish Volume 2, which covers all releases from 2009 to 2013. What about the stuff between 2013 and 2020? Or is it done not include Big Finish? Clearly not. I'm able to segue this next announcement that issue 552 of Doctor Who magazine reveals a reader's choice of the First Doctor's greatest adventures, and you can buy this and get it delivered to your home via whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Yeah.
whowon.co.uk.
I'm quite pleased about that. Yeah. It just amazes me that my first memories of Doctor Who magazine, apart from pictures, very interesting pictures of Planet of Spiders when I was doing my art lessons, for some reason there were Doctor Who magazines in the art room at school. It was initially a Marvel comic. Is it still a Marvel comic? Are Marvel still involved
in Marvel? It's from Panini now.
Is it Panini, is it? But yeah, so, and I think that's how Stan Lee got involved in doing some of the cartoon strips. Big Finish Range relaunch for the Doctors in 2022. Commencing in January 2022, Big Finish will relaunch its regular Doctor Who release schedule.
They're not doing the monthlies. That's what's happened. It used to have a main story by one Doctor each month, but now they're doing box sets of them.
Okay, well, it's dedicated ranges of each of the first 12 incarnations of the Doctor. For more than two decades, Big Finish has been producing brand new Doctor Who audio adventures starring the actors who originated the roles on TV. So Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, David Tennant and John Hurt. In recent years, many new ranges have been introduced to the released schedule, incorporating all of the Doctor's eras from 63 to 17, 2017, that is. As the company looks to the future, a revised schedule will see a number of new range additions. I'm not going to go down all of them, but you can read them on DoctorWhoNews.net. Lucy Wilson mysteries called Lockdown. I think we might have referred to this last week, funny enough, so I'm not going to say anything more about that. Yeah, that's about it for Doctor Who News. Not a lot going on there, really. I've mentioned whowon.co.uk, but I'm going to have another look.
So whowon.co.uk?
I think it was whowon.co.uk.
It was, yeah, and I don't think anything's come up, no. Oh, Monster of Peladon audio, audiobook. No, there's nothing else coming up. What's coming up soon? Latest products? Nothing. Okay, so there we go. Lavazzi.co.uk. There was they're putting up lots of offers recently. So keep your nose or ears to the ground, because I shared an offer that Lavazzi put out, and I think Meninda himself shared an offer on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. So yeah, plenty of offers at Lavazzi.
Some sort of giveaway that I didn't enter because I've got
the Fourth Doctor's scarf. There we go.
So, yeah, keep your ears to the ground and keep checking Lavazzi's website. And
that.
The other thing you could do is actually sign up for their newsletters and everything, because that's where you get emails that give you good offers, basically. So that's it for that. Next week, we're going to be reviewing a story called The Resurrection of the Daleks. Now,
We have done it before.
Yeah. As far as I remember, I've sent Kyle the video for this, so he's supposed to be on next week. So I'll keep our fingers crossed on that one. I might have to remind him.
I like the pictures you took of them today.
Oh, yeah, those are really sweet pictures.
I suppose they're all right.
jeez.
Hang on a sec. There's one that's an outtake one, which it is on in the my website, the online gallery, of Nala the dog. Just when I took the picture, she decided to have a shake, and the lead's all like, you know, it's all like wiggly wobbly, and her face is all over the place, and looks sort of a quarter in mid shake, and it's really grotesque and funny. So I might have to share that somewhere. Well, but
we have not done this one before.
Make your mind up.
Now, I'm looking at someone's compiled a list of everyone that we've done, and we haven't done that one.
We haven't?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Yeah,
I'll just make sure I'm not doing
anything next week. No, Conker Sturberus is next week, by the way, so I'll be doing a live link up there.
Why are you laughing there?
By the way,
Oh.
So that's next week. Resurrection of the Daleks.
Personally, I don't think they're going to even have it when it was postponed to, but that's just my own opinion.
Okay. I was just thinking, actually, reason.
Sure, you know, that could make Matthew actually say something.
I was just thinking, obviously, we're fast approaching the end of the Fifth Doctor's era to be introduced to the Sixth Doctor's era, which, again, isn't going to last a great deal of time, which therefore leads us to knowing that I think before the end of the year we're likely to be in New Who, and I'm thinking, and I may have mentioned this before, that it's very likely that we're going to be doing two stories or two episodes per podcast. So if it's a two-part story, we'll do the one, or if it's doesn't quite work that way, we'll work away into it, so we're not going to be doing that too slowly for me. I just think it'll just drag it out too much.
Gone through them all once already.
So we'll just do two. This is going to be difficult with Kirby on the show.
Conker Sturberus is scheduled for October 10th and 11th.
Okay. Thanks for that. Let's hope it happens, and hope things get back to normal soon. Right then, so that's it for this week. Thanks, guys, for coming along and persecuting me. And hopefully everybody will enjoy the show this week. And see you again next time. Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
Bye.
I was half expecting Debbie to say scarecrow. Maybe she did. Nobody
yeah.
heard.
Yeah. What's wrong with it?
No, you did. Sorry.
Didn't hear you.
Scarecrow.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.